It's great to be back once again for the 265th installment, the 265th episode of the Parish of the Patriots. I'm glad to be here, and I'm really glad that all of y'all are here to join. I know most of you are return listeners. If you are a new listener, I'm glad you're here, and I hope you'll stick through the whole thing. Listen to the whole thing. We do have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly the halfway point. When I say roughly, that's very roughly. It may come earlier. It may come later, but it's roughly the halfway point of the show. Listen to it, even if you think, I don't want to listen to that Jesus stuff. Listen to it. It won't be like anything you've heard. Something you can use. Something you can use. I encourage you to do so. If you get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We do pass. This is the part where I pass the offering plate around. I get it out of the way early on. I don't harp on it. But if you get something out of it, if you put something in the plate, I do appreciate it. Right here at the Parish of the Patriot, we exclusively use the ultimate privacy coin, which is snail mail, just snail mail. And right now my plan moving forward is that's what we're going to do. We're going to do snail mail. I may change my mind later, but we are doing the snail mail. It's the ultimate privacy coin. Not too hard to fill out an envelope. So let's get into this week's listener supporter mailbag. First up from Mr. TGPD, perhaps you should remind your listeners that they can use a fake return address on any snail mail they send you. That's from Mr. T. I don't know what you're talking about. I thought you lived on a very based street and a very based town. Are you insinuating? Can't be it. Nope. Yeah, it is. Look, I mean, realistically, though, I'm straight up. Look, all kidding aside, it's very difficult for me to put all kidding aside. Your mail, let's be real here. Your mail is mixed in with millions and millions of other pieces of mail. People at the post office ain't sitting around going, who's delivering to this P.O. box? Also, I would just like to say, because sometimes I feel, because I understand, look, I get it. I understand why people, you know, value their anonymity. I will edit y'all's notes down when I receive them. I will cut a lot of stuff out. Anything that I think somebody could listen to is, hey, that sounds like so-and-so, and to put it together with like the first name or whatever I use, you know, they could put that together. You know, I edit, I get it. But at the same time, I mean, look, in my conversations with Sven, the UK, okay, the UK police have completely now, at this point, they have completely gone through Radio Albion and given it a clean bill of health, okay? I'm proud of that, by the way. You know, some people may have their own opinions on that. But if the UK police have gone thoroughly through Radio Albion, because it's part of Sven's case and you know, he's going to be getting at, they've gone through Radio Albion. They've given Radio Albion a clean bill of health. In other words, there's nothing on here that violates UK hate law, ever evolving hate laws. Yeah, I think we're pretty good to go. You know, I mean, I recognize that these things change all the time as far as what they define as acceptable and not. But nonetheless, I believe if our content is lined up enough for the UK authorities to go, yeah, no, everything seems to be jolly okay. We might not agree with what they're saying, but we don't see anything that violates the hate speech laws. I think we're pretty good to go. You don't find any kind of terrorist stuff going on here. I don't get so over. Like I said, I get valuing anonymity. Believe me, I understand why and why that's important. But at the same time, don't get to the point where you think you're donating to Al Qaeda or something. I mean, we're not that. Let's keep going. Let's keep going here. And again, when I get fairly long, so a lot of the stuff I will edit down, isn't it? But always remember, you know, if I don't read everything on it, I do obviously read everything y'all sent me, but I have to edit for brevity. And I also, again, do my best to protect y'all's anonymity. Dear Grandpa Dan, I want to say thank you for doing so much for Radio Albion this last year. You've stepped up, kept it going. You're an example to us all. Faith is work. and you're doing the work. May God bless you. I read a couple of good books last year. One is The Days of Vengeance by David Chilton. It's a chapter-by-verse breakdown of the book of Revelation, and rather than an abstract painting where people can project their own perspectives and priorities, it's very specific. I recommend it to anyone who has stumbled on John's extremely symbolic-laden work. Also, The Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, as I myself have struggled with self-control throughout my life. And Marcus offers a lot of insight for men who don't get training on these kinds of things from their fathers. I just want to close by saying, love your sermons. Your talks on sin last year really helped me understand how Christianity really applies to life. I don't even want to say Christianity is a noun anymore. It's a verb. It's a practice. Very good. I agree with that. Anyway, it's a duty. Do it enough. And it's a habit. Keep at that habit long enough. And it's the life God made for us. Thank you for being light upon this path and showing me the way. And that's love from David. I appreciate it, David, and I appreciate everything else you sent here. And I just want to say, you know, the bird is still here. The rest of y'all sitting there, y'all don't even know what I'm saying. But David, no, the bird is still here. The bird is here in the room. Bird has been here in the room. So, yes, I will keep that, keep this one as well. Well, I do appreciate it, and I always say I really appreciate Dr. Johnson for continuing his work here at Radio Wild Man. And I appreciate y'all. You know, y'all stuck with us. I know, you know, I'm not putting up some fake humility. I know the content level for the network has gone way down. There used to be a whole lot of other stuff here that is not here anymore in Sven's absence, because basically doing my own stuff and posting up Dr. Johnson stuff, that's about all I'm managing. It's all I'm taking on. And I appreciate all y'all sticking through. I think our work, as far as Matt's work and myself, I mean, we're continuing to put our best effort forward. But I mean, just the variety. Albion narrations is gone. You know, there's just a lot of content that's absent with Sven not being here. And it just, you know, it is what it is in his absence. So I appreciate it, because, I mean, y'all choose to listen. That's also a part of it. And again, we do. I do appreciate it. Anyway, let's get into this last one. Dear Grandpa, hoping that all is well with you and the family. I'm muddling on working to cure myself without resorting to those white coats of Baphomet. You're in my thoughts and prayers. May God bless. And that's from Nick. Thank you, Nick. Well, you know, when it comes to dealing with the white coats, you know, I tell people, you know, you're in charge. I'm not one of those absolutists. I won't go to the doctor for anything, though I go to the doctor for very little. But they try to bully you, you know. They try to bully you and get you to do stuff. You know, just they want you just to follow orders. And you know, sometimes you got to go to the doctor. You know, sometimes you got to. I mean, I'm grateful that they cut the kidney tumor off of me. I mean, that would have grown and gotten really bad. So I'm really glad to have that done. At the same time, I don't just blindly go along. My oncologist stays mad at me because I'm supposed to do these cancer. They want me doing these cancer scans like 3-4 times a year. Well, for starters, I can't afford it. Second of all, I'm pretty skeptical about this stuff they shoot in you. They have to put it in this thing. It comes out of a vault. And they put it in this encased metal syringe thing because they don't want to be exposed to it through the outside. And they shooting that in my veins? How often I want them doing that? What kind of role does that play in cancer coming back? You see, you're in charge. This year, last year, I think I wound up doing it twice, and they were all huffy at me about, you need to be doing this more often. You're supposed to do this more often. Like, well, you ain't paying for it. I told them, too. I ain't scared. I basically told them, well, you ain't paying for it now, are you? And then they mumble something about, boy, it's your health. You know, you can't put a dollar value. Yeah, but you some bitches are, ain't you? They always say that, don't they? You can't put a dollar value on your health. And they're the ones putting a dollar value on your health. It's very important you get this. Okay, well, if it's that important and my health is so important, then why don't you knock some off of that $3,000 a pop that y'all want for these scans? Well, we can't do that. Yeah, shut the hell up. Shut the hell up. Can't put a dollar value on the health. And they're the very people putting high dollar value on your health. They see it's more like blackmail. That's what doctors do, is blackmail. And they get huffy when you don't pay. I don't mean like stiffing them. I just mean like you say, well, like I say, this year, I'm probably going to do one scan this year. They're not going to like it. They're going to whine at me and tough shit. You know, I get that, you know, and again, that's just a balance. That's just a decision I make. Somebody might look at that and say, well, I don't want them shooting that stuff in my veins at all. I ain't doing it at all. And that would be your decision to make. I've decided between cost. But I mean, honestly, even if I had the money, I'm not doing it as often as they want me to, because I don't think it's good for them to be shooting something like that in you. I think that itself probably can lead to cancer coming back. This is my opinion. I don't trust the healthcare industry to, you know, not put a price on my health. So in my judgment, for my decision, I'm probably going to do it one time this year. They're going to whine at me. Oh, you should be doing it more often. I don't care. That's the decision. And you know what? When you do that, you're empowered. And if something goes wrong because of your decision, you own it. You don't have to blame them. They ought to appreciate that, by the way, that you ain't going to blame them. They don't, because they're busy putting a dollar. They're busy putting a dollar figure on your health and then lecturing you about it. Anyway, but yeah, no, I mean, I'm not one of those, you know, because you hear these stories about, like, you know, somebody has something wrong with them and, you know, something that could be easily treated, but they refuse to do it because, you know, God's going to heal me. And I ain't one of them people. I mean, if it's something that could be done, you know, and you're comfortable with what they're doing, like the way I say that, with what they're doing, you're comfortable with what they be doing to you, you know, I mean, do it. I mean, take advantage of it. You know, don't be putting God to the test. It's just, well, yeah, let's get this cancer cut off of me or whatever. You know, that's for me. Anyway. Now, of course, other areas of quote unquote, like psychiatry, I don't even consider that. That's just witch doctory shit. I don't believe in that pretty much at all. They people, they're crazy. Yeah. And I mean, I guess there's somebody needs to take care of them people. But as far as what falls into like a lot of psychiatry or counseling, I'm going to counseling. No. They're going to go give you these meds. We talked about that before. They always want to prescribe you some meds. Make you feel better. Like you're not supposed to feel bad. If that's the answer, we all should be on meds because life is a struggle, right? You're not happy. We'll give you these pills to take and fool your brain into thinking you're happy instead of dealing with why you're not happy. Instead of giving you the tools to work through things so that when the next thing comes up, you can overcome. No, that's what we do here, but that's not what they do. They don't give you a prescription, dope you up. And then you got all these crazy people going off and they all always on these drugs, ain't they? Anyway, that wraps up our listener supporter mailbag. I thought we'd get into a little bit of like some UK stuff. UK, talking about the UK. I read a story the other day, a couple different stories. And before I pick on the UK, I have to say this for all its faults. You know, this is like not some fake thing here. I mean, I say this with all sincerity, with all the faults with the UK, and there are plenty. I have to say this with my communications back and forth with Sven. Obviously he's in jail, he's in prison, but I mean, he's treated by comparison. I mean, he's still locked up, but I mean, by comparison to say the U.S. prison system, it's a much better system. It's much better run. They treat people much more humanely than the circus situation of the U.S. prison system, which is just a free-for-all shit show. You just basically thrown in the jungle with the U.S. prison system. I've talked to people that have gone to prison for various offenses. Just people you run. I'm just talking about people you run into in your life. You know, people you work with and you come out and you conversate and they tell you, yeah, I went to prison for this, that, or the other, you know. And if they feel like it, they open up and tell you what it's like. And a lot of the, and most of them will tell you like a lot of the, you know, horror stories you hear. I mean, yeah, that goes on. I mean, I talked to a guy years ago that had just got out. And, you know, for some, I don't remember. I don't remember what the offense was. It wasn't like a political crime. It would some kind of BS. But anyway, And this guy was telling me, he volunteered to me, you know, I'm never pry into people's business, you know, like, you know, so you went into prison, somebody rape you in the ass, you know, I mean, you don't do that. That's rude. But if people volunteer to tell you, and this person told me, and I think it's probably fairly right. He said, you know, yeah, that goes on, but I mean, basically what he told me is most of the homosexual stuff that goes on, there's actually consensual people doing that with one another just because it don't count if you're inside. You know, and the younger guys, you know, all forming up gang. You know, that's what I say. It's a circus show in the U.S. prison system. You know, this guy is a member of the whatever, you know, prison gang. Because if you ain't in some sort of prison gang, you're on your own. And you're going to have a hard time. But this guy explained to me that that's mostly among the younger guys. If you're an old, you know, he's an older guy. And he said, you know, he didn't really have no trouble like that. You know, I mean, he had trouble. You always get in trouble. You're in there with a bunch of criminals. Of course, you're going to have trouble. But, you know, as far as that kind of stuff, it, you know, you didn't really have trouble with that. But anyway, long story short, the UK prison system is much more functional. And it's actually, you know, people can work on rehabilitation, as it were, or, you know, focus on getting the skills they need to move forward in life. You know, Sven's got many opportunities to look into different interesting things, and I've encouraged him to do so and take advantage of that while he's in there, you know, whether it's study courses or whatnot. He's not in there, like, you know, fending for his life or something, because they actually, you know, tend to the prisoners. Instead of just throwing them in there and saying good luck, they actually tend to the prisoners, make sure everybody's, you know, doing what they're supposed to be doing, you know. So I do. Kudos to the UK prison system for actually, you know, operating on some sort of functional level. However, you know, it's still clown world out there. The British clown, the Isle of Clown. It is still the Isle of Clown. Now, I'm confusing. Get my accents lined up. I saw a story, a couple of different stories related to you guys. I saw one story with the UN. Is there a more useless entity than the UN? I don't think so. Some UN commission somewhere was tisking the UK. Because the UK has a big problem. Now, I knew. This is the UN that can't seem to do a damn thing to stop the actual literal genocide of the people in Palestine, the Palestinians, who are now down to starving to death. They can do nothing about that. But they issued a report that the UK is a real problem with racism. Yes, racism in the UK. You see, the police are arresting too many Africans and too many gypsies. So they've obviously got a racism problem, not a problem of maybe those groups happen to be doing more crimes. No, 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 no. According to the mighty UN, the UK has still got to tackle their racism problem because they're picking on these people for their ethnic group. While the UN is saying UK is coming up short in the racism department, I read another story in Scotland. They're already preempting this. Don't worry. They're on the case. Turns out Scotland police, they came out and said that there's certain crimes they're not even going to bother. They're not even going to bother investigating any longer, much less prosecuting. Now, we know here in the U.S., shoplifting is basically a non-crime any longer. People go into the store and don't steal stuff. It's just because they choose not to steal stuff. Good on them, I guess. Now, Scotland police said they're going to quit investigating these crimes, but they said they're not going to say which crimes they are because, you see, they said then the criminals would take advantage of this and start doing those crimes when they find out they're not, like, the criminals ain't going to figure it out anyway. We already know from the statistics that basically burglaries already fit into this category. So it's not like we're talking about petty crime here. We already know by the statistics that pretty much burglaries are non-investigated crime. But to come out and say, well, there's certain crimes that we're not, well, why have a law against it? You know, just go ahead and make it legal. Straight up, just go ahead and make these crimes legal if you're not going to investigate them. to say it's no longer illegal to break into somebody's house. Oh, but they're not going to tell you which country, so you don't know. As if the criminals aren't going to figure that one out. It's their business. It's their job to be a criminal. And you think they ain't going to figure out what they ain't going to get prosecuted for. And they're going to be shocked when these, because they always use the same justification. You know, we're doing this so we can concentrate on the more serious crimes. They use the same excuse here in the U.S. And what happens time and time again, like here in the U.S., they say, well, we ain't gonna prosecute like these shoplifting and these other petty crimes like car theft, breaking and entering. We're going after the violent stuff like murder. And they do this, and then they're shocked when they're going to focus on those serious crimes, and those serious crimes go up. Well, they go up because the assholes they were arresting for the smaller crimes are the ones doing those crimes, too. It's the same guys. They always act like it's two different groups. See, you've got the criminals that go in and loot the stores, but they're not the ones going around doing a drive. But yes, they are. It's the same dudes, man. The guys doing the little crimes are the guys doing the big crimes. So I'm sure in Scotland, when they quit officially prosecuting things like burglary or whatnot, they'll be shocked when these other quote-unquote more serious crimes go up and not down. Because it's the same guys. You're not arresting them for them other things out on the street. They're doing these other crimes. Now, what's funny about this is, at the same time, there's a law now going into effect in Scotland that requires the police to investigate every report of something that can be categorized as a hate crime, which we know that's a broad category. So if you pass out an offensive flyer and somebody doesn't like it and they report it, this flyer is some sort of hate crime, they're going to drive past the guy knocking out the window to your house to go in there and steal what little you have. So they can drive down there and harass this guy for passing out a flyer saying, I don't know, something about pro-Britain or something. I don't know. Yes, they're going to investigate the hate crimes, the quote-unquote hate crimes, while these other crimes, they're openly saying, not just people saying, well, I don't think they're even trying to solve it. No, they're saying, we ain't even going to mess with it. It would be like you go and apply for a job and they want diversity and you're a white male. After you file that application, after you leave, it goes in the trash can. That's what your report. You go report it to the police. Somebody done broke the window out of my car. You know, they broke the window out of my car. They just stole the car, except I had the club on the steering wheel. It's an age thing. I know what the club is. They still sell that, by the way. They stole the stuff out of my back seat. That extra roll of toilet paper I keep back there. They stole everything. Okay, well, take your report, and then you walk out the door, the thing going in the trash, they ain't even going to mess with you. You pretty much already knew that. And this, too, because people know they're not actually going to investigate or enforce any of this, then they'll come out and say, well, actually, crime's going down. They do it here in the U.S. Crime's going down. Where crime is going down. Well, look here, reported robberies, they're going down. See, our policy is working. It ain't working. It's just that people know y'all ain't gonna investigate it anyway. Why call y'all? Why waste their time having y'all show up? More than likely, y'all are more likely to look around and go, well, that's all fine. You called us up for, this burglary and all, and then destruction of your property. I get that. But while we're here, we've spotted a bit of a code violation here, mate. You got a code violation here. We're gonna have to talk to you. What do you got here? What's this flyer on your window? Who's this patriotic alternative people? We're going to take you downtown for further questioning. You might be involved in some sort of hate crime. People just ain't going to call. When people know they ain't going to investigate it, you know, why would you call on shoplifters when you know they ain't going to arrest them anyway? And then they'll go around and use that as an excuse. This is why statistics are such bullshit. They go around and say, see, our statistics, they reported crimes have gone way down. Well, yeah, because everybody knows y'all ain't going to do nothing anyway. Why call you? Why deal with you? Hell, it's a hassle to deal with the police anyway. Why call them? They're just going to come down, file a report. They're going to throw it in the trash.
Unless it's a hate crime. Oh, my gosh, some hate speech happened. The bobbies are on the way. There's been a hate speech.
Hey, look at that. Hey, look at that, Nigel. Somebody breaking out that window. I apologize for the shitty accent. Somebody breaking at the window of that house. We ain't got time for that. We're out of code 3 hate speech going on, man. Somebody found a flyer on the ground. Pretty questionable. That lady's been drugged off into an alley. She knows what she's doing. These lasses get all kinds of frisky. Come on, we got to get down here. You don't know what a big deal it is. We could get that promotion. We did this prosecution over this flyer. Or somebody saying something. Somebody overheard their neighbor saying some hate speech in their house. We're going to have to go kick in the door. Just like the other guy breaking out the window. They're doing the same thing. You either get your window, you get your door kicked in and robbed. Or you get your door kicked in by the other gang and robbed. It all comes out. It's all going to come out the same. And they're going to sit around and say, see, crime has gone down because people don't bother reporting it because y'all ain't going to do nothing anyway. Maybe that's why the UK prison system is actually, you know, pretty decent as far as what they do. Because they got people like Sven in there. They don't have any other. They don't have these other guys in there. I don't know. If you're locking up hate speech people and not actual people like committing crimes. It is probably going to be a little better. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud here. Well, what I'm also thinking is we got to get into the Christian specific segment. We're on a roll. I done told you, you don't want to miss it. Let's go. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. Once again, this week, I'm going to try to get into a couple of things, maybe a few more, but there's two things I want to get into today for sure. We're going to cover these two things. They're related. We're going to get those for sure. If we got time, we may get into a few little, another few side things. But I had an interaction recently. In fact, between now and the last show, I had an IRL interaction with somebody. And it was just one of those you run into somebody and you're doing some brief business together and then you part ways. It was a stranger. But we had an interaction and it really stuck with me and it made me ponder and think about things. And I was talking to this person just for a few minutes time, and this was a Christian believer person, and they made it a point to tell me how they go to church and whatnot, and we got to discussing working on things and when things don't go well, you know, you're working on a project and you know you think you fixed one thing and then you turn around and something else just fell apart and you're moving on to the next thing. We were just talking about that and, you know, what a challenge that can be. And this person says to me, he says, well, you know, God's funny like that. You know, you think you're getting ahead and God's like, no, you're not. You're not getting ahead. And you're like, why, Lord? And the Lord's like, well, did you pay your 10% tithe? No, I don't think so. And during this interaction, when this person said that, I stood there for a moment and I kind of laughed and I just said, man, I said, that's just life. You know, we're supposed to struggle. It's supposed to be a struggle. It's supposed to be a challenge. That's how we grow. And this was a brief interaction, and I left it at that. However, after the interaction was over, like days after, even obviously now, I continue to think about that interaction and that mindset. I've said this before recently, and I just find this as a sign to continue on this point. And there's two things I want to get into, and we're using this interaction to jump off. The first thing, and again, this is something I've touched on before, but I really want to try to nail it down, is this: the dangers that are inherent in this overemphasizing, you know, that God's will, everything in your life is God's will. It's a crutch. It's a crutch for people's faith in struggles, but it's a dangerous crutch. And it's a crutch that I encourage people to get their hands around. Yes, God's will plays out in your life. Yes, God has a plan, but there's several different plans. God has a plan for each and every one of us. His plan is the same plan for everybody, our purpose, which is basically our purpose in this life. We're supposed to spiritually grow. We're supposed to struggle and come to understand Him, spiritually grow and get mature so that we're ready for the rest, for the real life. That plan, as it were, I mean, that applies to all of us. then sometimes God has very specific plans. You can read through the book of Acts and you can get numerous examples of God having very specific plans for people. Like he is doing something specific, something, you know, very narrowed down. There's a mission here. I'll get it spit out here in a minute. There's a mission here. That's a very specific plan. And the fact of the matter is very, very few of us are ever going to be actually involved in like a specific plan for God. And we're all involved in God's plan as far as what he has laid out for us. People will use this, it's God's will, crutch for their faith and their lives. But like I say, it's a double-edged sword. Because as I pondered my interaction with this man, I was thinking about how it's very easy to go from, well, this misfortunate thing, or I'm struggling with something, you know, it's God's will. I put my faith in God. I was thinking it's a very fine line between that and God, why are you doing this to me? You see, when you get a mindset that God is micromanaging your life and everything that comes about that's bad, well, that's just a part of God's plan for your life. You're going to have things in your life that are unjust. They're just not right. And you can go very easily, I believe, you can go from using that crutch of I'm propping up my faith, because usually this comes down to you're defining faith as some sort of emotion. You're emotionally propping up an emotional definition of faith with this, well, it's God's will, I'm surrendering it to God, instead of just understanding it's just one of those things in life. Very quickly, if you're going through something that involves injustice, something that's not right, it's going to be very easy to slip into basically blaming God. Why would you do this to me? Why? Now, bearing down on this idea, one of the things about life, and this is part of, again, that wider God's plan that everybody is involved in, this struggle. God gives us things in this life, in this world, that you go through, that everybody experiences, normal experiencing things, where we come to know him by the things we go through and by the things we see in the world around us. A prime example of this is becoming a parent. If you're not a parent yet, you're just going to have to take my word for it as we discuss this. If you are a parent, this will hit home and you're going to understand what I'm saying. If you're a parent, you take care of your children. You know, you raise your children and you do your best for them. But at some point in time, your children grow up. And when your child grows up, there comes a point, say you send your child off to college. You have a son and you send your child off to college. And you send them off to college, but you don't follow them there. You don't go like a helicopter parent watching after a toddler. You know, when your child is a toddler, you got to watch everything they do, because they'll find something to get hurt on. They'll go find something to bang their head on. They're crying all the time and falling down. But we ain't supposed to be spiritual toddlers now, are we? And God's not a helicopter parent. At some point, you send your child off to college. Now, you worry about them. And one of the things you realize, and you probably know, even if you don't have children, you should be able to understand this, hopefully, that no matter how old you are, if your parents are still alive, they worry about you. You'd be 40 years old, married yourself with kids, and you talk to your parents and you talk to them long. And if you understand, they sit around worry about crap that you got going on in your life. It's like, I'm grown. Why are you worried about me? Okay, can't help it, because you're still their child. No matter how old you are, they're still your child. You as a parent will send your child off, say, to college. And while they're there, you don't know what they're getting into. You don't know. They're going to be faced with things they've never been faced with before. They're going to have struggles. They may even face danger. It's a dangerous world out there. And yet, you send them off anyway. You worry about them, but you send them off anyway. When you think about it, it would be much safer. You know, this society, we're always talking about safety. Got to be safety. Safe. It would be safer if you just kept them at home. You know, the jokes about living in your mom. It's like, you lock them up in the basement. Keep them down there. Keep them at home. Helicopter over them. Don't let them out there. It's a dangerous world. But you don't do that. Why? Because you understand that they need to grow up. They've got to mature. And those things, even though as a parent you worry about them and you're concerned and you hope that God will watch after them and they'll have enough sense to stay out of danger and all of those things. And still, in spite of that, you send them out there into the world because you understand that they have to mature. If you helicopter them and keep them all rounded up and just keep them in your house and don't let them go outside and don't let them out of your sight as if they were a toddler, they're never going to mature. They're never going to be able to go out. They're never going to be able to understand how the world works. And part of the joy of parenting is seeing them go from a toddler to a grown adult, able to make decisions and to make their way in life. It's the same way with God. We're not supposed to be spiritual toddlers requiring looking after. And yet so many people have that mindset that God is supposed to be their helicopter parent hovering over them, making sure, don't do that, don't do this, don't trip and fall and hit your head. I hear people whine and complain, well, why does God do this? Why did God let this happen? You ain't supposed to be a spiritual toddler. You're supposed to be out here growing up, experiencing the things in the world. This crutch of everything is God's will quickly can turn into blaming God, because you are going to face things that are unjust. You're going to go through things that you don't deserve to go through. And that's just life. As I told this man, that's just life. We're supposed to struggle. That's not picking on you. You didn't do anything wrong. This is life. We're struggling. You know? And if you send your child off to college and your child gets in trouble, you know, something they can't handle, you know, they're going to try. You know, you send your child off to college, they're going to try to handle everything themselves. As in a lot of ways, well, they should. But if they get in something there over their heads and they call you up, say, Daddy, I'm in trouble. Yeah, I don't know what to do. I'm in trouble. I'm in a bind. Something's happening. You're gonna hear. You can be like, you should have told me about this earlier. You can jump in the car and drive 4 hours or whatever you got to do where they're at, if that's what it takes, because that's your child. You're gonna get on after it. So you're not struggling alone, but you are struggling. Does that make sense? This is where our prayers come in. If you get in over your head, you know, you get on that prayer line, you call back home, Daddy, I think I'm in over my head. I don't know what to do. But the struggle itself, this is a part of life. We continue on. We struggle with these things. That's what we're supposed to. Now, the other thing I wanted to get into was this other insinuation that this person made, that perhaps some of the struggles they were facing was because they had failed. They had failed God to pay because they hadn't paid 10% of their income in tithes. We're going to get into that. And this is something you're not going to get a message in any church. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying you're not. But I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you about that today. For starters, isn't it ridiculous to reduce Jesus Christ down to the IRS? You know, Jesus is the tax collector. Yep, you didn't pay your fair share. This comes because churches will preach on this tithing. I remember when I was a kid growing up and I had to go to church, family drug me to church. I would sit there in church and you know, even as a child, I would listen to the sermons and sometimes they were good. Even as a child, I may not understood much, but they were entertaining. But I always hated it when I sat down in church and it became apparent within the first 5 minutes the preacher was going to do a pay your tithes sermon. It was like sitting through 30 to 45 minutes of the Jerry Lewis telethon. This is going to be your age thing. You know, you're old. You remember the Jerry Lewis telethon. You know what I'm talking about. You had to sit there in the grind and get lectured about paying those tithes. You could pay them tithes. This got doubled down on later with the prosperity preachers. They would sit there and say, not only Do you need to pay your 10%, pay your tithes? But if you do, God, look here, I read this in the Old Testament. God's going to pay you back 100 times that. Do you know what that means? If you give me, Mr. Preacher Man, in this church, $10,000, God's going to give you $100,000 back. That's a good deal for you. What could you do with $100,000? You see, like God is the like God is the lottery. And this is being preached from pulpits. This is being preached from preachers with a position of authority, and they've told people this for years. God is either the IRS that's going to come punish you because you didn't pay your 10%, or he's a slot machine. And if you put enough quarters in there, if you put enough tokens in there and pull that handle, God's going to be the jackpot and pay off. These are the things that discredit the faith and dishearten the faithful. Because after all, if you do pay your 10%, you buy the DVDs and you give this guy 10% of your income, and you're sitting around waiting for the jackpot to hit, and the slot machine never lands. You say, Mr. Preacher Man, where's my prosperity? You said if I gave my 10%, God would give me a new house and a car. I'd already planned out what I was going to be buying with all the payoff that God was going to give me. Didn't come about, and they'll tell you something like, well, you sure you gave a full 10%? There might be $1.28 somewhere you forgot all about, huh? Huh? You think you can pull one over on God? Or then there's always the vague, the problem is probably because you lack faith. You don't actually believe in God enough. They're lying. It's all bullshit. It's lying because they're running a money scam. I'm just saying it. Now, I understand churches got to have money to run on. You know, let's talk about the 10% tithe. And just, this isn't going to take but a minute because it's not that hard to understand. In the Old Testament, when God established the nation of Israel, each different clan, each tribe, you know, they got a certain set of lands. Remember, everybody was either growing crops or running livestock or perhaps doing some sort of lumber or things such as that. But that's what most people were doing. And everybody got assigned these lands. And even if they sold the lands off, every so often those lands had to go back to that family possession. If they sold them off to a different clan, a different tribe, after a certain amount of time, those lands reverted back. So it wasn't actually, it was sold, but it was more like a long-term lease because it would go back to that original tribe. And all these different groups, all the different tribes, they got assigned lands so they could work the land, make a living, except for the priest class. The Levites their job was to tend to the things of God, to tend to the sacrifice, to tend to the temple, and to do these things. And yet, they weren't given any lands. And they still had to provide for themselves. They still had to eat. They had families. Yes, they had families. How else were you going to have the next generation of priests come up to tend to the house of the Lord if they weren't having families? So they had families and children to take care of and themselves to take care of, and yet they couldn't work the land. They didn't own any land. They didn't get any land. They didn't get one. This is where the 10%, because the 10% came in. Okay, you got to take care of this group of people because they're doing the things of God. So that's where that money goes for upkeep on the temple, to buy the things, you know, to take care of the temple for the things they were doing in the temple. And so these guys could feed themselves and their families and have clothing and shelter and all of the necessities that go along with it. Simple as that. Now, how would that apply today? It doesn't. You know, you may be a preacher in the church, whatever, but you can own land. If we look in the New Testament, Paul says in his letters, he says, you know, I could have demanded a gift from you to live on. You owe me that. You know, I mean, I've tended to you spiritually. I've brought you to the faith, you know, so that your very soul could be saved. You know, you could give me, you know, something to live on. But he says, I didn't do that. Instead, as you all know, I worked with my own hands. I supported myself while at the same time preaching to y'all and giving you the word. I worked with my own hands. Paul earned his own way. Yes, sometimes the churches would give him a gift if he was traveling so that he could do that. In other words, it was very much like what we do here, this show. I'm not comparing myself to the Apostle Paul, but I'm saying it's very similar to what we do here. You're never going to hear me sit here and say, y'all need to, I joke and I say, don't be shy, pay those tithes. It's just kind of just a running joke. I think it's funny. Probably I'm the only one that does. I'm never going to seriously, though, in seriousness, sit here and demand that y'all somehow owe me 10% of your income because that's stupid. I can work with my hands. I, do what I can. I'm basically unemployable, yes, but I can still do things. I'm still on my grind. Still got my grind going. I'm still on my hustle. I do what I got to do. This is what Paul said. He worked his way. He continued to try to earn his keep while doing this. And when they could, they would give him a gift. It all worked out. The Lord provided. He didn't demand 10%. Now, did he? Now, you tell me if the Apostle Paul didn't stand around demanding 10% so he wouldn't have to work or do anything else, where these guys today, where are they getting off with that? But see, you're not going to get that. I told you, you weren't going to get this message from any church because it's a business model. They want you paying them as much money as you can. Again, I don't mean to be all critical. If you're having an annual, I don't have any. We at the Parish of the Patriots here have very little overhead. I'm here in the prestigious recording studios, very prestigious, a.k.a. my bedroom. I don't have any overhead, per se. Now, if you're going to have a stone and mortar church with electric bills to pay, I get that. And those things have a place. And it takes money to keep that going. I get that. But it shouldn't be a business. It's not supposed to be a business. Just as Jesus Christ is not the IRS, the church isn't supposed to be Walmart either. And they're trying to get as much money in as they can. They want to keep people, they got to keep that money. And they're never going to sit there and say, oh, no, you don't need to worry about giving that 10%. You're not ever going to hear that. So much. The tithing thing is one of those few Old Testament parts that the modern church hasn't abandoned. That's one thing. They're holding on to that part. They pick and choose what's handy and pay your 10%. But there's a problem. Again, it's a problem. And this reverts back to my interaction when this person is churning that around in their mind that perhaps God is punishing them because they didn't pay their 10%. Maybe that's why they're struggling. This person, may God guide them to a greater understanding. But again, they attend church every week. They should be getting that guidance. And obviously, they're not. This person, is starting to entertain, that was my impression, in this short, brief interaction, is entertaining the idea that somehow they're struggling instead of simply being a part of life. They're struggling is somehow God punishing them because they've been chintzing on sending God money, as if God needs money. People doing God's work, they have to have money to operate on. Yes, as I said, that's a reality. But to act like you're paying God off or he's a tax collector, that's not the way it works. Now, I want to move in to something Bible specific here. Look at 2 Chronicles chapter 34. I encourage you to read the entire chapter. We're not going to read the entire chapter. We're going to read one verse of it here in just a moment. But when you go through the Chronicles of the Kings and in the Old Testament, you see this pattern. And it's an amazing pattern to me. It's an amazing pattern to me because you will have a king come up and, he does what is right in the eyes of the Lord, and he tries to right the things that are wrong, tries to get things going in the right direction. And these were hereditary monarchies, and this king, he'd do the right thing. And then the king would die and his son would take the throne. Like his son, you would think the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And yet his son, the next king, he wound up being a total shithead. He wound up doing all this idolatry and leading the people doing all that's evil in the eyes of the Lord. And sometimes you'd have two kings in a row that did right. And then sometimes you'd have a big string of assholes that would do what was wrong. And yet these were all related. It's an amazing pattern. And of course, as things get worse, as you get later, the shitheads start outnumbering the righteous kings. But in chapter 34, we have a righteous king, and he's ordered the rebuilding. And this righteous king, again, comes right after his daddy was POS. He's turned his heart to the Lord, and he's assigned guys to fix the Lord's temple, to fix it all back up. It's fallen into disrepair. He's gone out and torn down the idols, the high places, the altars to Baal, where they burn children alive and child sacrifice because they thought it would bring them more money. He's gone around and he's done all these things. While they're fixing the temple, one of the guys fixing the temple, he comes across a book. And he looks in the book and he reads through the book. Well, the book is the book of the laws of Moses, the book of what God said, this is what you have to do to maintain your kingdom. You see, the people had strayed so far from the Lord, they'd forgotten all about this. They knew there was a vague idea. Does it sound familiar? People have a vague idea now about God, but they don't know any of the specifics. The people then, they had a vague idea. Back in the day, the Lord watched after us and guided us. That's how we wound up with this land. But they didn't really understand the nuts and bolts of that. A vague idea. This man finds this book and he reads through it and he's like, we ain't been doing none of this stuff for a long time. So he goes to the king and he reads this book to the king. The king rents his clothes. He tears his clothes because the king, his reaction is, you have no, basically like the meme, if you only knew how bad things really are. He's thinking, okay, we're getting back on track. We're rebuilding the temple of the Lord. I've torn down all these idols in high places. We're getting things going. I'm getting things going on track, thinking things are better. And the man brings in the book and reads it to him, and he realizes they haven't been doing any of this stuff for a long, long time, long enough that the people forgot they were even supposed to be doing it. And he realizes how bad it really is. So he sends some guys to inquire of the Lord. So they go to this woman. She's a prophetess. See, women had some roles at the time. She was a prophetess. And, they inquire of her, what's come about with all of this? And she tells him straight out that the Lord's going to destroy the nation. You're done. You're done. He's going to bring about the destruction of the nation. Now the king, he comes out and he winds up, he gathers all the elders, all the tribe leaders, he gathers them up and makes them listen to the book. I mean, that's the best he can do. Now I want to look at, we're just going to read verse 28 because now the prophetess has told him that he's going to bring about, that God is going to bring about the destruction of the nation. He is going to destroy it. However, in fact, let me correct myself. Let's back up. We're going to do verses 27 and 28. Because now it comes to the king personally. The Lord has sent the word. He's done. He's going to destroy the nation. But we'll pick up here at verse 27. Because thine heart, now we're talking about the king specifically, because thine heart was tender, and thou didst humble thyself before God, when thou heardest his words against this place and against the inhabitants thereof, and humbled thyself before me, and didst rend thy clothes and weep before me, I have even heard thee also, saith the Lord. Behold, I will gather thee to thy fathers, and thou shalt be gathered to thy grave in peace. Neither shall thine eyes see all the evil that I will bring upon this place and upon the inhabitants of the same. So they brought the king word again. So the Lord says, I'm going to destroy this place, but because you yourself are doing your best. You've heard this, you found out, you've humbled yourself. You're going to see it in your lifetime. You're going to go to your grave and sleep with your fathers in the grave in peace. Now, so a couple of things I found. I picked this up because I found this interesting. What did God say here without saying it? Because we know God is just. He says, I'm going to destroy this place, but you're not going to see it. I won't do it in your lifetime because you've humbled your heart. You've done what you can. He winds up gathering the people together, makes them listen to what's in the book. What God told the king here, without, you know, as the saying goes, in not so many words, because again, God is just. He told the king, they're going to go right back to this. He didn't say it specifically, but that's what he said. He says, I'm going to destroy the nation, but it's not going to be in your lifetime. You're not going to see it. I've heard your prayer, your earnestness. You turned your heart towards me. You're doing the best you can. You're not going to, don't worry, I'm not going to do it in your lifetime. But by still saying he's going to do it nonetheless, because we know by God's law, the children shouldn't be punished for the sins of their fathers. God doesn't contradict himself. God wasn't saying, I'm still going to destroy them because their fathers and grandfathers did these things. So what God said without saying it in so many words was, as soon as you're gone, they're going to go right back to the same thing. It doesn't matter. They all gather up and they all weep and they all mourn and they burn the sacrifice and they agree with you 100%, King. As soon as you're gone, they're going to go right back to it. They're going to go right back to it. You're not punishing them when he brings about this destruction. You're not punishing them because of what generations past did. It's going to be because of what they're doing. In not so many words, God told the king, they're going to go right back to it. You're doing the best you can. I respect that. And you're not going to have to see it, but they're going to go right back to it. They're going to go right back to their sin. They're going to go right back to their idolatry. Another thing I think is worth pointing out is here in verse 28 that we just read. Neither shall thine eyes see all the evil that I will bring upon this place. This highlights again, you know, biblically speaking, you know, because people conflate evil and wickedness. God is not wicked. And if people look around and they say, oh, it's evil. But God says, you're not going to see the evil that I'm going to inflict on this place. God isn't doing wickedness. It's just bad things. They would say it's an evil. Yes, it's coming from God. Well, God doesn't do evil if you define it like wickedness, like something from Satan, obviously. You're going to see this calamity. The calamity itself is evil. In other words, it's just a really bad thing. I think it is important to understand that because you see evil, and like I say, I think in our minds, you know, with our modern definition, we tend to define it, you know, as like being the same. If you say, what's the difference between evil and wickedness? You know, people basically say they're more or less the same thing, but they're not. God doesn't do wicked things and God does not sin. Evil doesn't even equate sin. It's just a disaster. If you're sitting at home minding your own business and a tornado drops down, destroys your house, that is a great evil thing. Doesn't have anything to do with wickedness. It's an evil thing. It's a calamity. It's something really bad. And again, I think that's just an interesting point to always bear in mind. But I thought that was interesting, and we're going to wrap up here. But I just thought that was interesting. I thought we'd share it here. Because what God was saying, because again, we know that God is just. He just told the king that they're going to go back to it. I respect what he basically told him. He respects what the king was doing. He's heard what he said, and he's glad, you know, he's doing what's right. But when he said he's going to still eventually destroy the nation, he's still going to wind up destroying the nation. What that meant was they're going to go right back to it. And they did, of course, we know this. They did. They went right back to it. And before we close out, it's important, I think, when you read these things like from the Old Testament, God bringing about this destruction, because people go about doing their own thing. They go do this idolatry and a whoring after other gods and whatnot. And then a calamity would come, an army would come marching up against them, and they would be like, where's the Lord to protect us? Where's God? The Lord is supposed to protect us. In days gone by, the Lord marched out with our armies and brought us victory. And I think that can apply a lot of times to our own lives for a lot of people. For a lot of people, they go through their lives, a lot of Christian people, they'll go through their lives, maybe go to church on Sunday, maybe not, or whatever. And they don't think about God at all. They just go through their lives. They go through their day-to-day life. And then something evil happens. A calamity comes about. A crisis of their faith. And what do? Oh, Lord, they in there, they hit their knees. Oh, Lord, they go to church and they're asking the preacher, pray for me. I got this great calamity. This great evil has come upon my life. I'm in this struggle. I don't know what I'm going to do. I got all these problems. Lord, help me, God, please. And then the calamity passes. Everything gets resolved. Life moves on. What do? Just like the people of Israel, they go right back to it. Well, then they got all this time for God. Lord, are they on their knees? Lord, help me. I've got so many problems. Lord, help me through this crisis. I don't know what to do. And then the calamity passes, and what do? Just like the people of Israel. It's like God told the king, they're going to go right back to it. They go right back to it. God's tossed into the back burner, and right, good, now I can go right back to doing what I was doing. Now I can go right back to it. And God is forgotten until the next calamity comes about. And you see, that pattern that people have in their personal lives, it's right there in the Old Testament. You read through there and the people go off idling and a whoring after other gods and doing all of these things. And then an army marches against them and lays siege and starts taking over their cities and taking them into captivity. And they're all like crying out to the Lord, Lord, help us. And then when the calamities pass, they go right back to it. This is, you would have a king come in and he'd tear down the high places and burn up the altars and do what's right. And then the next king comes along, they go right back to it. A lot of people do that in their own lives. They ain't got no time for God, ain't got no time to think about the Lord. But when evil comes about, when the calamity comes about, what are they doing? Lord, crying out to the Lord to help them. And then when the calamities pass, they go right back to it. Right back to it. You don't want to do that. God is also not 911. You either walk with him or you don't. You want God to hear your prayer. People say, I don't think God hears my prayers. Maybe because he don't ever hear from you unless you want something. Unless you need something. You either walk with the Lord or you don't. You can't just go off doing your own thing and then as soon as you get into trouble, now all of a sudden I got time for God. I cry out, God, 911, come fix my problems for me. And then when you get past the problem, you forget all about him again. You ain't got no time for him. Don't be going right back to it. You don't want to do that. We got to wrap up. Got to wrap up on that note. I appreciate you joining us this week. Thank you again, all of you, for tuning in and listening. Thank you for those of you who dropped something in the plate. Means a lot. I do appreciate it. I hope you get a chance to check out everything we've got up here on Radio Albion. We're doing our best. And hopefully I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.